What did you cook for dinner last night? Hello, Anthony Fennell here. Welcome to Future Tense. According to a survey by Meat and Livestock Australia, the top three dishes Australians cook at home are steak and vegetables, roast chicken, and spaghetti bolognese. Yes, spaghetti bolognese. But research also shows that home cooking habits will need to change over the next 20 years to keep pace with our changing climate. Rebecca Huntley is a social researcher and writer. Rebecca has an Italian background and cherishes the weekly ritual of making spaghetti bolognese with her 8-year-old daughter. Her love of Italian food is matched by her interest in where our food comes from and who grows it. In this edition of Future Tense, Rebecca seeks to understand more about the impact climate change will have on Australian agriculture and how her bolognese recipe might be forced to change in coming years. Rebecca Huntley.
Almost every week I make spaghetti bolognese for my family, following the classic recipe my grandmother taught me. I want you to pop some olive oil. So we always start with olive oil.
Okay.
Pop that in there.
Like drizzle?
A bit. Keep going.
That's enough.
Okay. Okay. That should be enough. Actually, turn that right down. Spaghetti bolognese is a dish that's at least 200 years old, if not older. The earliest documented recipe for this meat-based sauce for pasta was from the late 18th century.
Carrot, onion, garlic, and celery.
The recipe included minced veal fillet along with pancetta, butter, onions and carrot.
Now we're putting the onions in.
Forget about the meat pie or the lamington. I believe spaghetti bolognese is our national dish. Research shows that it is regularly featured at the top of the top dishes Australians eat every week. It's eaten by babies and older Australians, the wealthy and the poor, people from all ethnic backgrounds.
Do you want to turn that up? I'm going to give you, go grab a wooden spoon and stir it for me.
Can I turn it up?
I'm teaching my 9-year-old daughter how to cook my grandmother's recipe. By 2040, she'll be the age I am now. But given what we predict climate change will do to food production in Australia, will she be able to teach her children to cook the same dish? What will climate change do to spaghetti bolognese? Specifically, what will climate change do to three core ingredients of the dish? Carrots, beef, and durum wheat pasta.
So I've kind of put three sticks of celery in there and one onion.
You put two onions in.
No, I cut the onions in half.
Oh.
Now the carrot.
Why do you have to put carrot in?
The way that my grandmother taught me, you always put carrot for each finely sliced.
Carrots are Australia's most popular vegetable, and they belong in any worthwhile version of spaghetti bolognese.
One of the things that parents do...
Hiding grated carrots in the meaty sauce is just one tried and true way for Australian parents to get their kids to eat their veggies. In 2015, the University of Melbourne released Appetite for Change, a report about global warming impacts on food and farming in Australia. It found that warmer temperatures adversely affect the carrot's flavour, texture and physical structure. Dr. Doris Blasing lives in one of the best places in Australia to grow carrots, Tasmania. She lives in this tiny little town called Penguin facing the Bass Strait. Her expertise is in crop productivity, and she worked for many years for Australia's biggest carrot producers and exporters. She told me over the phone that while we grow the vegetable across the country, in Western Australia, South Australia and in Queensland, in general carrots love a temperate climate and cool soils.
For the growers, really, one of the challenges is the, managing the temperature and the stress of, you know, high temperatures over several days when the nights don't cool down. There are ways of managing that with irrigation. There's also a way of using actually nutrition projects, different products. A lot of people in the vegetable industry have really cottoned on to keeping soils very healthy, which really will help them with the impact of climate change. So I think growers are actually onto it. There's a huge shift with growers using compost, reduced tillage, also breeding is a big part of it, breeding, you know, carrots which are more resistant to stress, that's drought stress. On the other hand, there can also be stress through water and too much water. While we might get in many regions less rainfall overall, there might be quite heavy rain or flood events. So there are different challenges.
Dr. Blasing says that carrot seed production will be harder in hotter climates. Higher temperatures can create strange carrot shapes that consumers and retailers tend to avoid. And more water is needed to grow the straight carrots we're used to.
Certainly can, when it gets too hot, the roots can go funny shaped and wiggly, or there can be a little bit pile. Yeah, there will be some wiggly shapes, and I guess one thing that we as consumers, we're forcing growers to, you know, grow straight carrots, and it's actually amazing how they do that. And carrots are often thrown out, there's nothing wrong with them nutritionally, they're just a bit misshapen. And then, you know, that is a loss to productivity. It's an extreme waste of resources. So we as consumers actually force growers to waste their resources in water and inputs because we don't think we should eat a wiggly carrot. We have to love the look. You know, we all are wiggly as well in our shapes and forms, and we accept that. So I think we should accept the wiggly carrot. There's no difference. It's just sometimes ground around a little rock or a little lump in the soil, so that makes it wiggly. And some of them look quite funny, so I think we should just take the fun. And that's how we as consumers can support growers to deal with climate change, because if they can use their resources more efficiently and we actually eat the vegetables and we don't throw them out, which is another waste of resources. So we can actually do a lot as consumers for growers to help them.
Maybe we need to ditch the centuries-old tradition of carrots in spaghetti bolognese in favour of something else. Professor Richard Eckhart is the director of the Primary Industries Climate Challenges Centre at the University of Melbourne. The centre acts as a broker of climate change research and education for agriculture. He tells me that we should start eating more climate change resistant foods. So we might swap the orange carrot for another orange veggie, the sweet potato.
Globally, There's some interesting developments where, for example, if you look at the FAO, United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, they're saying, for example, sweet potato is the new wonder crop for climate change. It's got a really good mix of carbs and minerals and vitamins, and it's got antioxidants. So it's got a fairly well balanced, say compared to potatoes, it's got a lot more nutritional value. Secondly, when you compare it to an above ground crop, so wheat or maize, you can have a total crop failure in a particular year. So if you had no rain, you don't get any grain. If you have a frost, you can wipe it out completely. With a tuber crop like sweet potato, you always get a tuber. Doesn't matter how bad the season is, you'll always get a tuber. So bad season, you'll get a skinny tuber, but at least there's something to eat. And that concept is something I think we should be thinking a lot more around, is what are those crops and commodities like sweet potatoes that are really good nutritionally, are starting to take on, you know, like sweet potato fries, for example, really taking on, and as an alternative. And then you think about the risk management that you have of having the thing underground, buffered from extreme heat events, always get a crop.
So we might have to start putting both wiggly carrots and sweet potato in our spaghetti bolognese.
Yeah, well, that starts to...
In order to be able to continue to smuggle veggies to future generations.
Well, traditionally, spaghetti bolognese had three different kinds of mince: veal, pork and beef.
We hear a lot about the relationship between beef and climate change.
Now,
I want to look at where the beef will be in the spaghetti bolognese of the future.
Now, let's pop in the mince. And what we have to do is brown it with the veggies. So you pop that in. And what you want to do is, as it starts to cook, you want to kind of break it up into...
Dr. Brendan Cullen is from a Victorian farming family. As an academic in agricultural science at the University of Melbourne, his research is in analysing the effects of climate change on the grazing industries, sheep, beef and dairy.
Yeah, I think the industry is adapting, developing grazing systems which are more flexible. So thinking about how they can flex with the seasons, so being proactive in identifying how they might be able to shift their animal feed demand by manipulating their stocking rate at key times of year to shift with the seasons. So traditionally our systems have been quite fixed. You know, we'd run a certain number of cattle and we'd aim to finish them at this time, but we need to be much more tactical and build some flexibility into the systems. In southern Australia, where we're looking at lower rainfall, where we've got opportunities to change the pasture base, so to change the pasture plants that we're using, we're seeing evidence that if we raise the fertility of soils, we can get the most out of the moisture that we have. And we're also seeing some evidence that some are active pasture species, things like lucerne, which can use that out-of-season rainfall, more summer rainfall that we've been getting in recent years, can be of real benefit on part of farms. So people are certainly adapting.
He tells me beef farmers are already observing the impact of climate change on their farms.
Yeah, I think there definitely is a real increasing awareness. So particularly over the last 10 to 15 years, we've had a particularly dry spell through the millennium drought, so from about 2000 to 2008 or so. And since then, a lot of variation. So some really wet years, but also some really dry years. And this is the thing that we're picking up in our modelling and farmers are telling us about all the time. It's the variation, the extremes of climate that we seem to be encountering more and more often.
Dr. Cullen tells me climate change isn't affecting meat quality at the moment, but he does see the possibility that the industry might move to different kinds of breeds of cattle as a response to hotter conditions.
As it gets warmer, we may see more tropical breeds, so breeds that are adapted to warmer climates naturally, so that they're used extensively in northern Australia, in the northern industry there, the Brahman cattle. So they're more naturally heat tolerant, but they do have lower meat eating quality. So we may see them used more further south as the temperature warms, which may have an impact on meat quality over time.
I've always assumed climate change was going to make meat more expensive in the future, but Dr. Cullen is reluctant to agree with me.
Oh, really difficult to predict anything around prices. I think what we're seeing, particularly across southern Australia, is a reduction in the pasture growth potential, and that is linked to the stocking rate, so the number of animals that we can carry. And as we get drier, as we get warmer, I do see that we'll be backing off stocking rates, so perhaps less supply, which will feed into the supply-demand around how prices are set. But it's really hard to predict in the long term what prices might do.
What about using a native food like kangaroo meat? Dr. Cullen says there's a tiny bit of evidence that roos have less methane emissions than cows, but there's the whole issue of how you manage them as a herd. They tend to jump fences, and they only breed in response to good weather conditions. That means, of course, that higher temperatures make the supply of kangaroo as a sustainable food source highly variable. Long hot seasons means no breeding. The spaghetti bolognese of the future might not include the luxurious additions of three different kinds of mince, like my grandmother always used, but it might include meat from a subcontinental cow with a bit of roux thrown in, if the conditions are right.
I'm going to go everywhere if I'm not careful. Right.
Okay.
Now, as we're waiting for the water to boil, we've got some spaghetti to go with our bolognese sauce. Are you going to hold that? Okay. That's probably enough for you and Daddy there, or you and me, only two people. So we're going to wait for the water to boil. Can you go get me a plate? Oh, look, put it down.
Is that why it's so hard?
I can't imagine life without pasta. The pasta I grew up with, both fresh and dried, was made from Australian-grown durum wheat. Durum is the hardest of all wheats. It has a high protein content, it's known for its nutty taste, it gives cooked pasta that essential al dente mouthfeel we all know and love. Bill Hunt is a fifth-generation farmer living and working in Bordertown in the upper southeast of South Australia, It's about 4 hours' drive from Mount Gambier. He has a 1,200-hectare farm that grows oats, canola, beans, barley and durum wheat. Bill Hunt is a climate change champion. He's part of the Managing Climate Variability Program, aimed to help farmers manage climate risk through support from university researchers. As a South Australian wheat farmer, he's noticed that the climate is changing and making life more difficult.
We can expect with more extremes, more prolonged spells of dry weather and wet weather and heat and cold. Everybody thinks about climate variability and there's an assumption that it's going to get warmer and drier, but it's not the case. It's longer periods of different extremes, and that's what's making life interesting for us.
Bill has lived through bad droughts in his time, but it's the increasing number and intensity of unusual climate events, huge rainfalls, floods, as well as droughts, that concern him. It's the constant variability. I asked him about the impact of all this variability on the quality of the durum wheat grain.
The worst thing that can happen is to shrivel the grain up so that the grain doesn't develop. You get a small grain and that limits your yield and it limits the amount of semolina that you can extract from the crop.
Bill believes his future as a farmer rests in the hands of researchers and university-run breeding programs that can develop different kinds of crops better suited to the changing climate.
There's different crops. There's plant breeders that are working on plant breeding different crops that mature earlier or mature later or whatever that can give us a result. So that's really, really important. But then when you've got a government policy that are not supporting you, your universities and that, to see breeding programs financed, then it really becomes a problem.
The other thing that's important to Bill is for farmers to be much more flexible in their practices. They have to adapt to the variable climate. So he is using sheep to solve his wheat problem.
And one of the things that's kept us going and kept us, reasonably profitable for the last few years when things have been so rubbish has been the fact that we've got sheep, indispensable part of our product mix, and the sheep can always eat a flooded crop or a droughted crop or a frosted crop and turn it into something useful. And that is a really important part of our flexibility, is the fact that we've got the sheep that can sort of take up the slack when things, climatically speaking, turn against us.
Now, I approached a number of local pasta makers, big and small, to comment on whether climate change was an issue for them, and I got very little response. I did manage to get a comment from John Stewart. He's the mill manager at San Remo. That's the company that buys Bill Hunt's durum crop. John Stewart wrote to me that, with respect to climate change, it is difficult to predict actual outcomes, but we are hopeful we can meet these challenges. The company invests considerable resources into developing better varieties through plant breeding programs and dedicated grain research science. San Remo is one of the supporters of a plant breeding unit for durum wheat at the University of Adelaide, run by Professor Jason Abel. Both Bill Hunt and San Remo rely on Abel's work to develop a robust future for the Australian-grown durum wheat crop. I asked Professor Abel whether durum wheat was particularly susceptible to the temperature changes associated with global warming.
Well, I think any crop, doesn't matter what commodity, Rebecca, will have problems in the future in terms of climate change. And I think one way we can mitigate against that, and I won't say eliminate it, but certainly reduce the risk of climate change is that as a plant breeding program, we need to be able to adapt now to changes that might be happening in 20 years in the future. And one way in which we do that is we go and evaluate our near-release varieties that growers may adopt in the years ahead in environments that we wouldn't typically be growing them in today.
Abel explains to me exactly how his crucial breeding program works, namely to stress test the wheat varieties in different environments to see what happens.
So I guess when we look at durum wheat, for example, we typically, well, growers typically grow that now in 2016 in what are known as medium to high rainfall zones. So where you consistently get averages of 400 millimetres plus per annum during the growing season. However, one thing that our breeding program does at the university is deliberately pick environments that say only have 200 to 250 millimetres of seasonal rainfall. Thereby, we're stressing those plants already, circa 2016, in order to be able to think about, well, can these new best lines or varieties that are coming through the breeding program withstand those challenges that we may face more widely in, say, another 20 to 50 years' time?
Professor Abel believes buying local is essential to ensure that these kinds of breeding programs can continue.
You know, when we have companies, the industry engaging with the universities, that's critically important in that when we do deliver science, we can actually translate it and make it meaningful. So by us as the consumers being able to support locally grown products, then that's a fantastic opportunity to keep that longevity of the industry going.
Bill Hunt is using sheep on his farm as a way to cope with climate change. But these more organic solutions will be matched in the future by some pretty amazing high-tech tools for the farmer.
The science is fantastic and you know, I am a scientist at heart. And when we think about science, we're in the age of many new technologies and tools that certainly can contribute substantially to agricultural productivity longer term. You got your big data, you got robotics, you got automation. We've even got, you know, nanoscale technologies and how we're going to be able to use that in the years ahead. So I think it's a very exciting time, not just for durum, but agriculture in general in Australia. And we've got a long way to go yet.
Wait, wrong car there. Yep, you're right, go.
After talking with Bill Hunt and Jason Abel, I've decided it's time to toss my Italian-made pasta in favour of the Australian-made variety. The only way we can continue to fund these essential research projects is to buy local. I'm going to give the final word to Professor Richard Eckhart, the Director of the Primary Industries Climate Challenges Centre.
Uncle, can you check down here?
He works with farmers across all parts of Australian agriculture. I wondered whether farmers were in fact sceptical about climate change, or were their attitudes shifting?
Very much there's a spectrum of views, but it's changing quite rapidly. So when we started in this work probably 10, 12 years ago in communicating about climate change, there was a general resistance. You'd probably say 75% of the farming community were just resistant to the idea of climate change for a number of reasons, and some of them fairly obvious. Prior to that, no one ever thought methane was a problem. So you suddenly go and tell a farmer, suddenly there's a new source of environmental pollution coming from your animals that you didn't know about. So there's an immediate resistance. Is this real? Is this just new science looking for a new excuse? And then the idea of climate change, there's this dissonance that happens where you walk out the next day and you look at the weather. I mean, that is their life. And you've just told them their life has changed or will change. So initially there was a lot of resistance to the message, and a lot of our surveys would say 60-70% of farmers would not have accepted the talk on climate change. I think the millennium drought and the actual heat wave, unseasonal heat wave events we've had, slowly that perception has started changing to the point where I would say that if you went and surveyed farmers now, you would find probably 65-70% would say the climate has already changed. And that's quite simply because we've got data that shows that climate has changed. The last 15 years look more like, in the agricultural record, actually look more like what we predicted 10 years ago to only happen in 2030 or 2050.
I'm just talking on that side of it, then.
Yeah, yeah. There's one more up this further.
So farmers are very much in tune with the environment. They go out and see the weather every day. And they would have to admit that things have changed. You know, we used to cut silage for dairy on Cup Day. That's November. We now cut silage in August, September. So I think adaptation to a changing climate is really on the agenda with most of the farmers. We found the Farmers Federation starting to bring this language in, that this is really important as a underlying cause of productivity stagnation or productivity, lack of productivity growth. So it's starting to be recognised. The mitigation message struggles a little in that, yes, the climate's changing, but is it am I contributing to that? I think there's still a bit of a struggle there. But where we headed with that message is that message has had to mature, where we're trying to reconcile how do we feed a growing world population, how do we increase agricultural production and reduce its impact on the environment. So you can't double agricultural production to feed a growing world and halve the amount of emissions it produces. That equation just doesn't add. So that's why we flipped the equation to an emissions intensity, a carbon footprint discussion. And that is far better accepted by farmers, because what you're saying is, as you get more efficient, the ratio of emissions to productivity changes. You become more efficient, your carbon footprint goes down, your emissions intensity goes down. The total might actually still go up, but the point you end up at is producing less to the environment than it would have otherwise. And they find that a lot more, they get a lot more traction with that.
That was Professor Richard Eckhart from the University of Melbourne. Oh, and for those of you who enjoy a glass of wine with your spaghetti bolognese, there's mixed news about the effects of climate change on winemaking. It's causing problems for winemakers on the mainland in areas like the Hunter Valley, as well as regional Victoria. But it's making colder climates like Tasmania far more desirable for grape growing. It's also increasing the alcohol content of wine around 1% every decade. Now that's great if you want to get smashed on half a bottle of Shiraz, but it's terrible for the taste and the quality.
Now over there, can you see the red wine? My grandmother used to use white wine.
My grandmother's recipe for spaghetti bolognese has endured through recessions and world wars. It survived all kinds of social and economic change.
All of it, keep going. Yeah, wonderful. That just gives it a depth.
You can't taste it.
No, it's not going to get you drunk, don't worry.
So basically,
I'm confident my daughter will be making the dish in 40 years' time, but probably a different version to the one that I grew up with. So sweet potato with some wiggly carrots, less or different meat than I use now. And if our wheat growers are to have any chance of survival, Australian-made pasta. Perhaps these adaptations are not a bad thing. With the help of our best academic researchers, farmers are already changing with climate change. The rest of us need to change too.
Right at the end. Okay, there we are. Do you want to stir that?
Yeah.
Then we'll put the oven on. Okay. Now that's going to cook for many, many hours.
How many hours?
Rebecca Huntley and her daughter with the Le Creuset on low, cooking the humble spag bol. As she mentioned earlier, Rebecca has also spoken to winemakers and scientists about the future of vino. And if that piques your interest, you'll find an excellent article on the RN homepage. And while you're there, you'll also find some interesting graphics for the future of wheat, beef and the wiggly carrot, soon to be supplanted, pardon the pun, by the sweet potato. Today's program was produced by Lorena Allam, the sound engineer Judy Rapley. Next week on Future Tense, we revisit mini-brains, and we meet an Australian scientist who's putting them to good use, trying to better understand how schizophrenia works and how it might be related to diet. That's next week on the program. Remember, we do provide transcripts of each and every episode if you're interested, and you can follow us on Twitter. RN Future Tense is our Twitter handle. I'm Anthony Fennell. Until next time, cheers.